The Tom Woods Show, episode 430.
In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You've found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Peter Schiff's gold company, Schiff Gold, is holding a special sweepstakes just for Tom Woods Show listeners. They're giving away a 1 ounce gold coin worth about $1,200. Enter for free at tomwoods.com/gold. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. By popular demand, we've got Bob Murphy back on the show, and we're going to talk today about one of those videos by Robert Reich that seems to show up in your Facebook feed once every 5 seconds. He's done a whole bunch of these videos. They're just a few minutes long a piece, or maybe they're drawn actually from one big video and they just do little short bits that they put on YouTube, whatever. But he is a wrecking ball in terms of economic sanity. Everything he touches, every argument he makes, it's all a disaster. And people are begging us for responses. So finally, I'm listening. We're going to give a response to one of these videos. We're going to focus in particular on a video dealing with $15 an hour as being a desirable minimum wage. $15 an hour is what we need, according to Robert Reich. And, you know, as a matter of fact, as I think it through, I'm wondering if Reich may actually be worse than Krugman. Interesting. Of course, we'll be asking the anti-Krugman himself, Bob Murphy. Robert P. Murphy holds a PhD in economics from New York University. He is the author of quite a few books. He's got several books that are coming out, actually, in the coming months, and they're all very exciting. He's the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Great Depression and the New Deal, and The Politically Incorrect Guide to Capitalism. You can get one of those as an audiobook for free through tomwoodsaudio.com. Bob is also the author of study guides for the major Austrian economic treatises, like Human Action by Mises, Man, Economy, and State by Rothbard, and The Theory of Money and Credit, also by Mises. He's the author of Chaos Theory, a very, very thought-provoking little book on market anarchy, and a textbook for young people called Lessons for the Young Economist. That's available for free with a free teacher's guide. I'll link to all these wonderful books at tomwoods.com/430. That's today's show notes page. And of course, if you'd like to watch that Robert Reich video before listening to this episode, by all means do that. You can do that on the show notes page because we'll also be linking to that video at tomwoods.com/430. Stay tuned after my conversation with Bob for an offer I'm making to all you folks who are on the verge of starting a new blog, or maybe let's say you're on the fence, you don't know whether to do it. I'm going to give you a special offer that will help kickstart it for you by giving you some free publicity for your blog. If you're afraid that you start a blog and then no one comes and reads it, well, I'll link to your blog. I'll send out a blast about your blog. So now the list of reasons not to do it has been reduced by one. All right, let's get Bob onto the show. Bob, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Always a pleasure to be here.
We're going to be linking on today's show notes page, tomwoods.com/430, to the article you wrote about this video. But we're going to be expanding on that article, this video by Robert Reich. I just told people about the $15 an hour thing. And it's funny, as I was going through watching the video, I was making notes and thinking of arguments I would make in response. And then I read your piece, and the arguments are, of course, quite similar. But yours is much more colorful than mine would have been in terms of your analogies. You are very, very good with analogies. You're almost at Schiff level, I would say, with analogies.
Well, I try. I'm still young.
That's right. I already explained to people about this series of videos. This is the one on the $15 an hour minimum wage, but there are many, many other videos that he has either made in this series or simply on his own or in interviews. You see him linked everywhere on Facebook. So people have been practically begging me to get you on and start taking on some of these Robert Reich videos. So we decided to talk about this $15 an hour one because this is becoming a fashionable cause. It really is everywhere, and it is so incredibly destructive. The arguments in favor of it can seem superficially plausible. Oh, well, studies have shown such and such, and of course, it'll help the economy because people will have more money in their pockets and so on and so forth. Let's begin with the great moral principle that Reich identifies at the beginning of the video that he claims all Americans believe in. What is that great moral principle and what's wrong with it?
Right. Well, he says a majority, but he makes it sound like, you know, the majority of people who are decent human beings.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So he says.
So not you and me, obviously.
Well, right. Obviously. Yeah. And he says that there's this moral principle that all Americans or the majority of Americans, whether Republican, Democrat or independent, you know, so even right there, that just throws me that that's the way he's thinking, is that no one who works full time should be in poverty, nor should their family. And so obviously if he's laying down that marker and saying this, you know, he's sort of almost guaranteeing his conclusion because now it's sort of like, well, given that no one wants to be immoral, we want to live in a moral society. So then how do we guarantee this outcome? And then, you know, to him, it's obvious that one obvious thing is that you have the guarantee of a $15 minimum wage.
I want you to give examples from your piece because they're so good that help us understand why this seemingly benign statement is actually hopelessly confused.
Sure. So the main philosophical point, I think, is to say it really doesn't make sense. It can't be true that for a society to be moral, first of all, you know, the society is not moral. It means the individuals are performing actions that are moral or immoral. But for everyone to be behaving morally, it can't be necessary that anyone who works full time in such a world or amongst such people necessarily is above poverty, because poverty is something that is partly dependent on the physical world and resources at your disposal and technology and so forth. It's not merely a matter of morality. Like, you could say to live in a moral world, everyone agrees that, you know, you shouldn't eat your neighbor, or you can't go and slaughter kittens for sport. That makes sense. But it doesn't make sense to say in a moral society, anyone who works full time necessarily will live above poverty. And so I gave an exaggerated example just to make the point. I said, what if a giant asteroid hits the Earth, kicks up all kinds of dust and soot and blocks out sunlight, and, you know, so crops don't grow and you can see the ramifications on the food chain? I said, in that kind of a catastrophic situation, surely over the next several months, billions of people would die. And that's not because the governments around the world all of a sudden decided to behave immorally or more immoral than they were the month before. It's just because of technological constraints and scarcity, and that's just the way it is. And so in such a world, there'd be plenty of people who could be working full time and they would starve to death, and so would their kids. And that wouldn't be a reflection on the inhumanity of man. It would just be, wow, that's terrible that asteroid hit. So I'm just trying to get people to see that there are objective features of the world, and that to just try to mix morality and people's physical conditions and how much they get paid for an hour of their labor, that's really mixing things inappropriately.
And of course, it would mean that basically nobody lived in a moral society up until maybe the 20th century, because you think of the conditions people have lived in since the beginning of recorded history. Basically, nobody's been able to live outside of poverty, no matter how many hours they worked, because of the physical constraints that they face in a world of scarcity. So the idea that this could be the criterion of what's moral is a category mistake. I like tell me about the example involving two employees, one with no kids at all, and the other has 15 children. Because this is a really good example.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Tom. That's why I like being on your show. No other host compliments me as much as you do per minute. So again, and then this is the kind of thing where, and that's partly why I resisted even doing these videos, because you're the same thing that you told me, Tom, that a lot of people have been emailing me and sending me messages on Facebook saying, oh, Reich's got this series. But they're so silly, I don't even feel like doing it. But I said, okay, let me try to think of new angles to show why these arguments are so absurd, because we all know the standard textbook, you know, supply and demand curves. So I said, all right, if it's really true, as Reich says, that there should be a worker who works full time ought to live above poverty and his family. Then I said, okay, so that means, let's say we got two workers. They're working at the same place of business for the same boss, and they're doing the same job, right? There's two different guys doing this very similar things, you know, next to each other, perhaps on an assembly line. And one worker has no kids and the other worker has 15 kids. So another tenet of progressive thought is equal pay for equal work. And so I'm saying, so surely if these two workers are doing the same job, then you would think they have to get paid the same. And yet the one guy with 15 kids clearly needs more income to keep him and the 15 kids out of poverty than the guy with no kids. And so what happens there? And so I said, well, I suppose one escape hatch is to say, oh, well, pay them both, you know, pay the guy with 15 kids enough to make sure he and his kids are above the poverty line, but then pay the exact same dollar amount per hour to the guy with no kids because you also have to satisfy the equal pay for equal work. And I said, so isn't that odd then that that means if you were in a society that was just barely meeting the moral criterion, that the wages of millions of low-skilled workers would be determined on the margin by how many kids the guy with the most kids in the country happens to have. And if like he has another kid, then the next day millions of people have to get a raise because he's got a
kid. Yeah, I would be pushing for that guy to have as many children as possible because that would we'd all get a raise and that would improve everybody's standard of living the more children that guy has. So that is a good point. Then you have, and again, I know people are waiting for us to get into the strictly economic arguments, which we will, but the way of thinking here is just so, juvenile? I don't know quite what the word is. You say, what if the person who works full time is doing a bad job? Now, would we be violating Robert Reich's widely held moral principle if the employer can fire this person? Because presumably, Reich would admit that if a worker shows up, as you say, for 40 hours a week, and then I'm quoting you, but does nothing except swear at customers and light inventory on fire, that the employer is allowed to fire the guy and pay him $0. Well, if Reich is okay with an employer paying $0 an hour to a worker who contributes nothing, what about a worker who contributes only $14 per hour? So here's your point. Why is it immoral for an employer to only pay such a worker $14 an hour in wages if that's what that person produces? What would be wrong with that? And how do we know that everybody who's worth talking about, apparently, produces at least $15 an hour worth of value? Has he investigated this? If so, how?
Right. And so maybe just to say that in slightly different terms, again, what I'm trying to get people to see is that it's true. If there's someone who's really working hard and just, man, is struggling and has a bunch of kids or whatever, yeah, everybody wants is rooting for that person and wants the person to do well, doesn't want such a person to live in poverty. But the point is to say, how can that be a moral principle? Because clearly, in other scenarios, we can easily imagine that if a worker is producing a low amount of output or value to the employer is allowed to not just give charity to the person. And so it's crystal clear in a case where the worker is being a jerk and is not contributing that the employer is allowed to fire the person. But what if there's somebody with five kids who shows up to work and swears at customers and lights the inventory on fire? The employer lays the person off. No employer voluntarily wants to hire such a person. Are we living in an immoral society? The person could say, hey, I'm willing to show up to work for 40 hours a week, right? And so, I mean, there's just this alleged moral principle just starts cracking when you try to apply it. And this really is actually having to do with economics in the sense of just showing Reich has no idea about how wage rates are set and isn't even seriously thinking beyond step one in these principles that he's throwing out, which is kind of shocking since he was a Secretary of Labor. You think he would have the first inkling of how labor markets work.
Now, let's move on to the more strictly economic arguments here. He says that if anybody is worried that a $15 an hour minimum wage is going to have disemployment effects on people who are lower skilled and, you know, by implication, maybe can't produce $15 worth of value to an employer per hour, we shouldn't worry about this because he says more money in people's pockets, so that is if people are earning these higher wages, means more demand for goods and services, which means more jobs. So he looks at the economy in this extremely simplistic way that the economy is just dollar bills buying consumer goods, and then people are employed, and then they buy consumer goods, and that's the entire economy. Now, what you point out here is that there's no nuance in this argument at all. He is simply saying that increasing wages will mean more money in people's pockets, which will mean more jobs when they go out to buy things with that money. what exactly is, I think there's more than one problem with that, but tell me one.
Okay, so one thing is that, again, if there's no caveat, there's no nuance, he didn't say something like, well, there's different forces at work, and on balance, if we raise the minimum wage from $7.25 an hour to $15 an hour, the influence of workers having more money, and since they don't save much to go spend it and raise demand, that will more than offset the disemployment effects from the fact that their labor is now more expensive. And so on balance, I think that that will help employment. He doesn't say that. He just says flat out, no, this is – he calls it fear-mongering to say that a higher minimum wage will result in disemployment. And then he gives the argument you just said, saying, no, actually, on the contrary, more money in workers' pockets will mean more jobs. And so if that's true, if it's a win-win, then why not push it up to $50 an hour? Or at least why not keep pushing up the federal minimum wage until unemployment is basically 0%? I mean, I suppose you could have the argument that once everybody has a job, then, you know, there's no further job gains to be had. But the point is he doesn't give any nuance. And so in this case, it is entirely appropriate to just exaggerate it and say, okay, well, then why don't we push it up to $30 an hour? Because the arguments that Reich is giving allow for that, right? And so that it's not our responsibility to get into his head and say, oh, well, actually, you know, he could have said such and such. That's not what he said. The whole point of this video is to make it look like any opposition to a $15 minimum wage is just completely from a Neanderthal perspective, from people who are either lying or idiots. And so the fact that he's making arguments on their own terms that would justify a $50 minimum wage, I think is definitely a strike against it. So that's one huge problem. I mean, beyond that, there's the whole issue of it's a Keynesian mentality and just saying that, oh, the thing that generates employment and jobs is having workers go spend money and not save it. You know, so that's entirely wrong, too. Clearly, the way people can, if you want to get full employment, you just have flexible wage rates. It doesn't, you don't need to make sure there's adequate demand for final goods and services. That's not really the important thing. You need to have flexible wages.
And if you want to imagine what the economy would look like if we focused entirely on consumption, which is what he's doing here, all we need to think about is somehow getting money into the pockets of workers so that they can go out and buy things. Like, that's the economy, according to him in this video, and according to many vulgar Keynesians in the media. Well, then imagine an economy where I've got some dollar bills and I go and spend them on a hat, but the hat maker does not plow any of that money back into his business. He takes that money and he buys a carton of, you know, three cartons of milk, and the milk producer buys a new shirt and the shirt producer, but no wages are paid because that's not consumption. No capital maintenance is undertaken because that's not consumption. No new businesses are open because that's not consumption. You would see that immediately the capital structure would collapse, or not immediately, but pretty darn quickly, and we would revert to barbarism. So obviously there's a little bit more to the economy than just circulating dollar bills around. Also, I've given this example. If it's true that we are just making people wealthier by artificially increasing the wages we pay them, then why don't we artificially increase the amount of money we pay to the lumber industry? Why don't we say that lumber prices should be raised by the government as well? Because then if we give more money to people in the lumber industry, they'll have more money in their pockets. And when they go and spend that money, that will create more jobs, and that'll be great. And then maybe we could make even more jobs by increasing the prices of steel and lumber and plastic and everything, because then all those people will have a lot of money to spend. You'll see what the problem with this is, that the more money we have to spend on these things, the less profitable we are, and the more rickety the whole structure is. So this is there are all kinds of problems with it. But before
unfortunately, a lot of progressives would endorse that argument if it comes to like farmers or having a tariff to raise wages for auto workers. So probably to really zing them, you'd say, should we have like, you know, higher bank transaction fees in order to give more money to the capitalists so they can go out and spend more? And they might say, oh, well, no, we don't want to give more money to the capitalists.
That's right. Exactly. Bob, let's pause for a moment and thank our sponsor. Hey, everybody, if you're like me, you're interested in holding some precious metals, but you may not know how to get started or what firms are reputable. You know all the arguments that gold and silver exist in finite supply and they can't be endlessly multiplied by a central bank, and they're a central, essential part of anybody's portfolio. But how do you get started? Well, do what I do. Go to Schiff Gold. It's Peter Schiff's gold company, so you know it's going to be top-notch, and you know the people you're dealing with are going to be efficient and knowledgeable. Well, here's something great the Shift Gold people are doing for Tom Woods Show listeners. They're giving away a free gold coin, a Canadian gold maple leaf coin worth about $1,200. Enter to win at tomwoods.com/gold. It costs you nothing to enter. I'll be announcing the winner on episode 446, tomwoods.com/gold. You have only until July 13th, 2015. Good luck, everybody. All right, I want to get back into toward the end of your article here and toward the end of his presentation. He says that studies show, and that this is something that you've talked about on this show before and in some of your writing. He says, studies show that these higher minimum wages bring more people into the employment pool, and this gives employers more choices, and therefore they have to have less turnover. But what that really means is that if now, let's say, some extremely menial job is now offering $15 an hour, yeah, that does increase the employment pool. What that really means is some people who would never have dreamed of doing that job because they feel like they're too qualified to lower themselves to it, well, their dignity doesn't matter that much if they can get $15 an hour for it. So now the low-skilled people who would normally be competing with that for that job, they'd be competing with each other, are now competing with much more educated, highly skilled people for the same job because, as Robert Reich says, more people have been drawn into the employment pool. And so the people who are the most vulnerable and have the fewest skills now have to compete with people who normally, if the wage had been lower, wouldn't dream of competing with them. How does this help the people at the bottom of the ladder, he asks rhetorically.
Right. And you're right there, Tom, that even on the face of it, it makes no sense what he's claiming. And beyond that, the studies he's talking, he doesn't link to the study, so I don't know, but the ones I'm familiar with, and I've seen this argument before, it is true. For example, like Walmart recently, you know, voluntarily raised the wages it was paying, or it might not be voluntary, it might have been partly to get people to stop picketing and so forth. But it makes sense for any individual company perhaps to offer wages slightly above the industry standard for, you know, for whatever line of work they're in. And one of the reasons would be to get a better quality applicant so there's less turnover and so forth. And that makes sense as long as it's any individual company doing it relative to its competitors. What it does not follow, if everybody in the if every employer in the country is forced to pay more, that therefore every employer in the country now will have such a huge, you know, pool of workers applying and will and be able to be choosier. And so and what's ironic is a person who made that point very eloquently back, I think it was in the late 1990s, in reference to the so-called living wage movement, was Paul Krugman, right? That was back when he was actually a pretty decent economist and was not – it was a numbers guy and was actually pretty straightforward. And he said that these studies showing individual companies benefit from reduced turnover by paying slightly above industry standard wages, obviously that does not extrapolate to say if you force them all to pay above – you know, it's not like every company can get the cream of the crop. That's impossible.
It's interesting, by the way, that Reich, I'm going to hold off on Krugman for a moment, but in the video, he makes much of the composition of people who earn minimum wage, but he says nothing about the percentage of Americans, the percentage of wage earners who earn minimum wage, because it's just a few percent. And then you would see, well, maybe this is not quite the issue that he's making out of it. I'm interested about what you said about Krugman because, as you say, you can look back in the archives and find some sensible comments by Krugman in the old days. But today, to your knowledge, and nobody knows Krugman better than you do, including Krugman himself, do you know if Krugman is supporting the $15 an hour thing? And secondly, do you think Reich is actually worse or more dangerous than Krugman, if you can measure this?
Okay, so on the issue of is Krugman supporting this stuff? Yes, he is, in the sense that he's given interviews and like when Walmart raised its pay, Krugman said, "See, you know, this proves the naysayers are wrong. That if Walmart's doing this, it can be done. We can do this." You know, that kind of silly rhetoric, like this is a football game or something, and we're at a pep rally. So Krugman has done. Yes, he has offered support, and I want to say he, in my mind, Krugman is certainly worse. I don't know. It's hard to gauge in the grand scheme who's doing more damage because Reich's videos get so many views. But the thing I don't like about Krugman is, as a Nobel laureate and I know it's not really the Nobel Prize. Please don't email me, everybody.
Right.
he has this certain authority. And so when he casually mentions how what the studies have shown and so forth, it makes it seem as if raising it to $15 an hour is going to be fine. That's very misleading. So we probably just take a moment to talk about that. It is true that there, and maybe Tom, you can link to it. I have an Econ Lib article going through these studies. There are some empirical studies that run econometric regression analysis, blah, blah, blah. And it says, hey, look, there are certain ways you can parse the data. And it seems as if modest increases in the minimum wage in certain states did not significantly reduce the employment growth, like in the fast food industry and so on. All right. So even taking all that stuff at face value, and I think there are problems with those analyses, but even if they were all gospel truth, it doesn't follow that jacking up the minimum wage from $7.25 to $15 an hour won't have a huge impact, right? That all these things, they're couched in terms of modest increases perhaps are not going to have a huge effect. And then everyone's taking, or guys like Krugman are taking those results and then boiling them down into quick sound bites and making people believe that, oh, this is just complete lies from Fox News if they're getting you to think raising the minimum wage at $15 an hour might make it hard for some workers to get a job at Burger King. Don't believe that. The actual peer-reviewed studies show otherwise. No, that's not true. To my knowledge, not a single peer-reviewed study gives us any knowledge of what would happen with such a huge increase in the minimum wage.
All right. I think that pretty much covers it. We may have to do this. I'm not pledging that we're going to do this for every Robert Reich video. I mean, come on now. We got to keep your sanity, right? We can't do this maybe for everyone. But this one, I think, has been decisively refuted. And, of course, you could spend some time, and maybe I'll link on the show notes page to an episode where I talk about, I must have an episode somewhere where I talk about how, if you want to raise wage rates, here's how it actually happens. Here's how it happens on a free market. And if you want to raise wage rates for some people at the expense of a whole bunch of others, well, we already know how to do that. But if you want to see a general increase in wage rates, so I'll put that on today's show notes page, tomwoods.com/430. Yeah, please do.
I'm glad you brought that up because, again, there's a lot of times it sounds like we're heartless and like, oh, so you're saying everything's fine. No, conditions are terrible for a lot of people in certain demographics in certain regions of the country.
And this will just make it worse. We're saying this because it obviously is going to hurt those
people. Right, and we do have solutions. It's not that we're just saying, well, they got to be poor and have, you know, five kids are on the verge of starvation, but hey, you know, buy my new book and that'll cheer you up. That's not what we're saying. Yeah. I mean, they should buy our new books, but.
Well, sure, yeah, and it couldn't hurt, but yeah, I see what you mean.
So there are plenty of things that we could say, and it, obviously, as people knowing our views, it's many state policies that contribute to this issue and restrain the growth in actual free market productivity and wage rates that these people would be able to earn if the government would get out of the way.
All right, so I'll put that on the page. I'll put your Econ Lib article. I'll put the article that we talked about today. I'll link to the Robert Reich video so that you can see we're not caricaturing him. We're not taking him out of context. We're being eminently fair to him. And on the other hand, the one silver lining of the Robert Reich videos is that it does give us an opportunity to restate the correct views. And as I've sometimes said, if you're not going to be right all the time, the second best thing is to be wrong all the time because that's also reliable. We know when we listen to somebody like Robert Reich, we know that we should more or less conclude the opposite, as indeed we have done today. Bob, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
All right, everybody, here's the offer I promised you. I released a free ebook last week on not only how to start a blog or website, even without knowing any programming or design, like me, what do I know about that stuff? But also, once you have one, once you're up and running, I talk to you about tips and tricks that I've used to help expand my online reach or, frankly, even make a living online. All kinds of neat programs and plugins that you might not know about otherwise are all explained in that free ebook. And it's totally free. You don't even have to sign up for my mailing list to get it. You can get it at freewebsitebook.com. And on that page, by the way, you'll also see a link to my short video showing you how you can be up and running with your new blog in 5 minutes. That's all linked at freewebsitebook.com. Well, here's what I'm adding to the mix here. Again, a concern that a lot of people have is, all right, I start a blog, nobody reads it. Well, I will try to give you a bit of a head start, a bit of a push to help you celebrate the launch of your blog or website. And here's the deal. Now, it can't be for a blog or website that's full of potty mouth language. I can't promote that. And it can't be something I'm, you know, I don't believe in. But within those constraints, here's what I'm going to do. If you, when you sign up for your hosting company, if you don't know what a hosting company is, read the book at freewebsitebook.com. When you sign up for your hosting company, if you sign up through one of my affiliate links, then I will send out a notice about your blog and your website to my email list. I'll post it on my Twitter account. I'll post it on my own website, on my blog, to welcome you to the world of blogging or to the world of websites. I'll do that. So here's what you got to do. If you sign up for Bluehost, which is very inexpensive hosting, you get a special discount through tomwoods.com/blue, then just drop me a line on my contact page at tomwoods.com. I will know that you did it, but drop me a line saying you would like the free publicity, and I will get right on that. Alternatively, I use Bluehost for tomwoodshomeschool.com, and for tomwoods.com, I use WP Engine. So if you sign up for hosting with WP Engine through tomwoods.com/engine, then again, I will do all this free publicity stuff for you if that's something you want. So once you've done it, just drop me a line at tomwoods.com. There's a contact page there, and I will do that for you gladly. Tomorrow on the show, we welcome Jim Bovard for the first time ever. James Bovard is like a one-man anti-TSA guy, but he's pretty much anti every government bureau you can think of, and you look at his whole career in journalism. But we're going to talk about what's really going on at the TSA and talk about the agency everybody loves to hate on the show tomorrow. So make sure you don't miss that. Subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher over at tomwoods.com, and we'll see you then.
The Tom Woods Show.